All right, we're doing the Brain Trust podcast, and I'm Adam Vassa, tabletop role-playing game designer in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And my name's Will Yopes. I'm a tabletop role-playing game designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Is that Adam Vass and Will Yopes back on a podcast?
You wouldn't believe it, especially if you just listened and didn't. The episode that came out last was recorded like 3 months ago.
Oh, it was recorded so long ago. Adam's back from tour. I'm back in general.
I'm thinking I'm back.
Yeah. But what's new? What's going on in the last 3 months? In quarantine time, that's like 6.5 years.
Yeah. I did a 7-week tour across North America. It went great. I met a bunch of Brain Trust folks on the way, and that was really cool too, because this was the first tour I'd done since we started that community. So got to hang out in real life with a bunch of internet friends, which was rad.
That's so cool.
Played a whole bunch of shows, did the tour life, had a breakdown for a couple days, but like 7 weeks, you know, just statistically you're gonna.
Yeah. That's on tour, it's expected.
Yeah.
You're going to, I mean, it's an extremely hard job. You don't have any privacy. Like, you're working every day, doing work all day.
Yeah, it's wild how intense it is and just how polar it is to shift from daily life
to Rockstar World. And not to mention that when your star meter does fill up and you have to crank that base into star power mode, that gives a full body exhaustion when you're done in star power.
Yeah. You have to start from zero as you rebuild the meter.
It's unsustainable. What was your note high score that you got? Notes in a row without missing a note.
420.
Wow. That's really good.
Yeah. Pretty pleased. Great number. Hard to argue with.
But yes, we are back on the Brain Trust podcast. We like doing it. We're not rusty in any way.
We know exactly what we're doing. We have a plan, and we're going to execute that plan.
And that's what we do every episode.
Let's give a, I guess, like a State of the Union real quick, too, since we're catching up. Like, what is Brain Truck? Should we
writing that down for tour?
Put a pin in that.
Want to make a dork thing?
Yeah.
Really fuck up often, and I will just think of something like Torque Team Racing, and then I will write it down, and then it will just dominate my thoughts.
I did the Brain Trust gang zine for Cyber Metal. That was a really fun project. It was the characters that we created on our Cyber Metal 2012 special episode, that they live in a abandoned Olive Garden convention center. Now it's like an adventure zine that's free at the Cyber Metal itch listing that has all of our characters as NPCs, and there's like a hotel crawl where you're going from the convention center to different rooms looking for something, and there's weird shit going on in the rooms, like The Shining style, like every room has got something fucked up in it. And that was really fun. Just like a little weekend project.
Yeah. But you were going to give the State of the Union.
I more so meant like State of Our Projects of like all the Brain Trust affiliate, like Discord ghosts.
Oh, that is at the printer right now as I'm speaking into the microphone.
Really is.
It's big. It's like 120 pages.
Wow.
It's beautiful, full of photography, illustrations from Kaylee Rowena, who is now working with R.L. Stein. Get
nice.
The fuck out of here, Kaylee. Jesus Christ. So if you want some of that good, Kaylee, our awesome photography, cover designed by Adam Vass, game designed by Adam and I, and with some bonus writing from Seb Pines and Maria Meissen, it is big and cool, and it is going to be in the United States and Canada in a couple months.
Hell yeah.
I have been playtesting the shit out of Big Grave Fashion Fantasy. I'm doing a campaign-length playtest. We probably have, like, 6 playtests under our belt, and it's just a blast to play every week. So I don't know. I don't have a date that this will be out because I am working with an awesome artist who only has availability in 2023. So I'm waiting to put stuff on the schedule until I have talked to this artist and we get our stuff all set up.
It's a novel concept.
I showed Adam some art today for a game I haven't even written, but I know I'm going to write. And I was like, I want to work with this artist. I'm going to focus on doing great art direction and getting the art, and then I'm going to write it to the art that I got, which is a really cool... I don't know if you've ever had that experience where, like, you collaborate with an artist or another writer. I bet you've had this. And you change something or use that as inspiration to, like, deepen and broaden the design and basically the verisimilitude of the project.
I've never really got to, partly because I'm often my own art illustrator.
Yeah, totally. And so I bet you find different synergies that way, too.
Yeah, for sure. I think the podcast is a major one. A lot of cyber metal development came from us just talking about it. In a weird way, I'll have it as like an individual, like, with cyber metal, I started the art before the game writing was done, and I just kind of sort of discovered things along the way that I wanted to mechanize and not just be set dressing.
Yeah, like you spend some time illustrating a jacket, and you're like, okay, what if this is like a game concept?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like with Black Mass, the art I got from Kate Lissette, she put so many little things that people were holding or wore on them.
Baubles.
I was like, I'm just going to make this a part of the character development. And it was like having the artist develop the characters because they just have to sit with the characters and do their thing, their work and their art. And it's just such a gift to just get like a cool, freaky spider in a jar, and then you're like, okay, this is going to be a whole persona for one of the characters. And you can kind of like, it's like making a puff pastry where you laminate the dough with butter and then fold it on itself a billion times, and then it just is a beautiful croissant at the end.
Damn.
I'm hungry.
Speechless. The show needed more butter, and then we got some.
We just need butter. That's the difference between your home cooking and us cooking on the Brain Trust. We use a ton of butter.
Let's use that butter and grease some wheels. Zoom right into the next segment that, of course, everyone knows and loves. It's
Pokemon time.
It's what?
We're going to talk about Pokemon.
It's Pokemon Hour on the Brain Trust podcast. We're playing it, and and I'm personally, you know, I'm loving it.
I got Scarlet. Is that the one I got?
I got Scarlet.
We got you got Scarlet. I got Violet. I can tell because my game is really different than yours.
Yeah. Does yours run?
It's in 4K. If you
that is very different.
So mine is in 4K, but it's at 5 FPS. It's capped at 5. Sometimes I hit 2. And yours is 50. I mean, you're capped at 50 FPS. It's pretty high. It's not 60, strangely.
But it's 1080p. But
you're at 1080p, of course.
Legally, it's HD, but... honestly, it does not look good. It does not perform good, but I'm not like a hardware person. Like I don't know. I just recognize when it looks shitty or it's not acting right or when it crashes. All that aside, which I think, I mean, there's a lot to put aside and it's not really excusable. for a game that size to have that many issues. But
we're just getting all this out of the way in the front so we could talk about how much we like
the game. Is really fun.
The structure is so cool.
It took a lot. It learned a lot from Legends Arceus or Arceus, which was my favorite Pokemon game to date. And took a lot of the things that were unique and cool about that game and put them in a normal Pokemon series. Yeah,
and I think, like, coming from Arceus and its own fucking Banjo and Kazooie textures and levels and stuff, like, I love the Pokemon battling. The Arceus changed some stuff around with, like, strong attacks and fast attacks, which is, like, mechanically cool, but a little undercooked. Have you found that the fights in Violet and Scarlet to be, like, legit difficult? Like, kind of getting swept by trainers that are coming out with, like, statted up teams with items and shit?
Yeah, so the main thing that's special about this game is that it's an open world and you can, air quotes, go anywhere. And the air quotes are there because there still is definitely a pathway that they want you to take. But I think of those trainers as like the giants in Skyrim, which unfortunately, unlike the giant, like the, you can see a giant from afar. All the trainers look the same in Pokemon, so you can't tell this, but there will just be some fucker that knocks you on your butt. And then you, as the player, are supposed to go like, oh, I'm not supposed to head to that area yet. I'm not ready. Like, sure, I can go to that area. The game allows me to go there. But this is them telling me maybe hold off a little longer.
So, like, there are those, like, spiky encounters that are super tough. But they're, like, even to your level, there will be encounters that, like, if you don't have a super effective type, you're going to kind of get smoked. If you're, like, I was fighting a Chansey that had leftovers, which heals you up after every turn. And that's, like, a competitive build for a Pokemon. I was like, damn, if I was 12, I would be getting my ass smoked right now.
So that's a really interesting subject, and that was something I wanted to talk to you about just generally, but we're not going to do it on the show, is how Pokemon simultaneously is a game that is the most accessible. They always treat it like this could be your first Pokemon game because their target audience, I think, is kids. But this game in particular feels like it takes for granted the fact that this is not your first video game.
Yeah. And some of the, like, I think a big part is, like, the focus on Pokemon's own special abilities, which is, like, for those of you that might not be familiar with Pokemon, the biggest brand in the entire history of humankind, literally. Maybe after the East India Tea Company. Each Pokemon has four moves, and each move has a type, and each Pokemon also has a special ability that kind of is a meta mechanic that flavors each one of these Pokemon. So one could be that if a Pokemon gets hit with an electric type move, they power up because the ability is called Lightning Rod. And another one might be every other turn the Pokemon loses its turn because it's lazy. Something like that.
Yeah, and honestly, I never had to read. I never read those before.
Yeah, and if you are into the speedrunning side or like the competitive Smogon side, which I like both of those, you just see these things that you kind of only expect at end game stuff, whereas in other Pokemon games it was kind of just understood that you just use your most powerful move on somebody. Yes. And then you probably will win.
There's a lot more crunch to the battle mechanics now.
Yeah. Or, like, that crunch that was already there is kind of used by the AI more, which is really interesting. But, like I was saying, the structure I love. You are doing, like, simultaneously three different challenges. And so one of them is to beat all the gym leaders and fight the Elite Four. We're all familiar with that. Another one is to go hunt all of the legendary beasts, whatever they're called.
The Titans.
The Titans. How could I forget that? legendary titans and where to fight them. The big crab. You can go do all of those and do that own, like, that's its own path through the game. And there's another one that's like fighting all of the Team Rocket of this game in all of their bases that are kind of like raids in the world. And you as a player are kind of given a recipe for how to beat the game, but you can adjust and pick any of these in any order, virtually. You know, it doesn't make sense maybe to do the first gym and the last gym and whatever. It's a video game, you know. It's not your Pokemon United RPG where you can do anything you want. But I really like that for a spice on the formula. It, like, immediately when I got to the main school in Spain, in the plains of Spain where it rains, is where Pokemon is. Yeah, I'm a big fan. This game also has more little cuties than ever before.
Lots of them. All kinds of new ones.
The little mice, little olives, little,
just very charming. Little
guppies. Yeah, I've never wanted to have a party of 12 more than this game.
Yeah, just to have the little homies around.
Yeah, like, I just want to see what they evolve into. And I don't want to... I got a Gimme Ghoul. You know those guys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that was great.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff. There's fun new guys. And that's, for me, the main thing that I find appealing about still playing these games.
And, like, not spoiling yourself on the evolutions and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a major
part. I hear that it's pretty okay to catch them all in this one. Like, you don't have to do so many Sword and Shield.
Turn the system upside down.
Turn the system upside down. Get, like, 60 critical hits. Like, that was one for Sirfetch'd.
Yeah.
I forgot that you had to turn the system upside down.
That one's specifically fucked up.
I wonder what of that we can bring into RPGs for, like, an item-based RPG. I could probably do something like this in Big Grave that's like, you can upgrade this item if you turn the book upside down. Something stupid like that.
I think we're running out of steam a little bit. Let's throw a break and make some stuff.
Yeah.
Pokemon is pretty good, though. Hey.
Who knew? And we're back on the Brain Trust podcast. Before the record, Adam was talking about all these new cards they got from their dad.
Yeah.
From a storage locker.
Yes. My family visited this week, and my dad gave me these, like, foil card packs. I actually haven't opened them yet. Just been admiring them from the outside. But... They're like trading cards.
You've been weighing them to see if there's any hollows in there. Any full foils.
They're trading cards from things. Like, there's some that are just like little guys. Like, one of them is just called Beyond Bizarre. And I think it's just like there's like a three-faced woman on the front of the pack. Couple Conan the Barbarians. There's one that's just called Melting Pot, which has a cool monster on the front. But if you go to, like, antique malls and stuff, you'll find these, like, boxes of trading card packs from properties you've never heard of. And
I love
they're
that.
Fun. They're cool. But we were talking about storage locker auctions and hunting and picking and that kind of stuff. And... All of the History Channel original programming that's not about aliens
is storage locker shit.
It's about people's belongings. And naturally, we're like, stuff hunting is a game.
Yeah, it's like a loot box. Like, I feel like this is the only way I would gamble in real life is if someone flashed a storage locker for a second and I had to say, yeah, I'm going to buy that. And if I see like a guitar neck in there, like that's something that I think I would go for. Do you have any, like, imagine in your mind's eye, we're both at a storage zone, a storage land, and we're betting on these storage lockers. We're bidding on them. You don't bet on them. That would be great though. And what's something that you could see a glint of that would make you interested in a storage locker?
An interesting thing about them too is like your motivation for going to them. Like if you're a collector, yes, versus like a flipper, right? Because you see a guitar neck and you want to bid because you want a guitar. But
you know, I'm remembering that Nathan DiPoletta made a cool game about this,
yeah,
where you are the people bidding on them. I think we could make something cool about exploring the interiors of these, kind of like that Cabinet of Curiosities episode.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, because that's my most recent engagement with a storage locker. So, for those who haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. It's pretty good, but the first episode is about a dude who does this, who buys abandoned storage lockers and all the stuff therein, and then tries to like sort. This guy is a flipper. He's someone who buys the stuff to sell for profit and hopes that there's like valuable antiques or something.
It is played by Buster Scruggs.
He's great, and he was. That character sucked, but I love that actor.
Yeah, he was great as that character. Yeah, for sure.
So, we want to dig through somebody's stuff.
Yeah, so I think, like, one part of it is choosing which storage locker to go into. So, I really like, you know, when you're bidding on storage lockers, you get to look inside for, like, 10 seconds and kind of get a glance at it. You know, it's like scouting a hex. You get an idea of what's inside of it, and then you got to make a decision. Am I going in door number 1, 2, or 3? And then maybe that's just your session of play. Like, you open up all three and you see that one is like full of vintage music gear, another one has a bunch of memorabilia, and a third one is like perfectly sealed boxes with no hints as to what they are. It's like each one of those is an interesting choice, and then you can go and tell a story of someone's life through what is sitting in this locker. Because, I mean, the understanding is that the person who sold it died, right? Or didn't pay for the stuff.
Yeah, that's... Usually it's dead people. But I think there is also, like, people who were late on their payments, and then their stuff's just all removed from them.
I'm actually like a Mr. Beast style YouTuber, and I fill up storage lockers with cool shit from Toys R Us, and then I just lapse on paying them so I could get free content from storage flippers.
So in gamifying this, how do we fill a locker?
I like that. I like this direction. I think, like, you dig through a locker. So I think something where you don't have any values, and then you create stuff and values. So, you know, you can get a glance at how much stuff is in there and the kind of types of stuff.
What if...
But you don't know until you start opening boxes.
This is almost like reverse character creation. So, ooh, we... At the start of play, we generate not the stuff therein, but the person who had it. Who had
that. That's such a good idea.
And then, so, on some, this is kind of what I wanted to do, or what I tried to do with my game Lucid, where you're like dream warriors, where you meet in public, like we meet at a coffee shop, and we're like scanning the room of all the other people in the coffee shop. And in that system, like, every player is describing one of these people as they're sort of the palettes of the game. And then you as the players choose which one of these people's minds you want to go into. So in that way, I think we have like three lockers at the start. And we say this one was owned by this, the oldest man ever. He was a veteran of every American war. And honestly, you don't really even need more than that. I guess you could say, like, he was, you know, sentimental or had some other, like, personal quality to...
I think the items feed into each other, right? Because storage lockers are arranged from... Usually, the oldest stuff is in the back when you could access it, and the newest stuff is in the front.
Right.
So when you are looking at this newer stuff that was placed here, or whatever it is, you get an idea of who this person is right now, and then you get a hint at what they were like when they put that other stuff in.
Yeah.
So you're kind of working through time through objects. And I think we could easily switch this to, like, you're the sci-fi storage locker cleaner outer.
Yeah, or you're exploring these abandoned ships that came back with no pilot or whatever.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, stuff like that. Just if we don't... If you're not interested in playing, like, the reality of, like, this is someone who passed away and they had a life and you're going to explore that life.
Right, yeah.
That stuff happens in games, but if yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I agree. You should put a little barrier here. Make it something further escape, I feel like. But obviously there's also...
Something fucking sexy.
I think, like, too, aliens. Like, the Cabinet of Curiosities one, it's set, like, vaguely modern time, but most of the characters in it are... It feels like cosmic horror. Like, there's...
Yeah.
Weirdos. So... You could also do that of just, like, people who are weirdos and their storage lockers.
Yeah, the weirdos are basically the same as sci-fi guys. And that episode is really good because it kind of feels like a Dario Argento movie. Like, it's a bunch of kind of peculiar collectors coming together. And then they go to somewhere I won't spoil. But anyway... Yeah, I like that, the reverse character creation, where you're kind of, like, dissembling, or not distilling, but, like, I don't know. I don't really think I have a word for it, but you've got this character, and then you're digging into their life.
And because it's, like, a material issue that we're talking about, too, it's, like, there's still this subjectivity to everything that you're... But so I think first step is this is the glimpse, right? This is the metaphorical glimpse our players have into this locker, is learning who the person was. Because obviously in gameplay, we're not going to be able to look at the suite of stuff. So I think the glimpse is this idea in our mind's eye of what a person like that might have or collect.
Yeah, it would be cool that you... get a random smattering of items, like, from a table.
So that,
and maybe the table is specific to that person.
Yeah, I think even having this be you could make, like, effectively, like, infinite cards. Like, writing an adventure for this game is simply making a person and a table of their stuff.
Yeah.
So let's say, yeah, that we define the person, we guess what kind of stuff they have, and then we populate the stuff from a list of possible options, which I think would have to be fairly long for the reveal to be dynamic.
Yeah, I would also like to, like, put the items in physical space. So, like, you draw the floor plan of the locker and just draw a square where it goes.
Maybe there's a circle, or like Mouse Ritter inventory where... Everything is those little, like, grid Tetris kind of... They're mostly squares, but...
Oh, that would be cool.
And then... So this comes back to, weirdly, like, we talked about... Do you remember the game we were talking about, like, a ski slope? Like, It's like a hex crawl where you can move, where you moved in different directions.
Oh yeah, right.
You could work your way through the storage locker from front to back, but like any exposed portion of an item in this grid allows you to access it.
Oh my god, I love that. Like if you found, you know, maybe the one thing is like all my old LPs are in there. And so if you go on one side, you can see all the soul records I have. And if you access it from a different angle, oh, I really like that. You will get all of the romantic records, but, that like I,
yes, yeah. But on turn one, you cannot get all of your angsty teen records because those are further back in the storage.
I love this, like, it's a dungeon crawl in a storage locker of memories. And you have to, maybe it's like a slide puzzle. So you want to get to the stuff that is literally blocked off that you can't get to. And by moving things around in the slide puzzle, you're experiencing, you know, if you hit this one item three times, it brings up a melancholic memory. And then you have to set that scene and then do it as a group. And if you hit it a fourth time, it's, you know, an ecclesiastical memory or something like that. And then you can get to the hotspot weird stuff in the locker. But you have to figure out how to get out of there also.
So
and you're confronted with story on every side.
Here's an interesting question, I feel. Are we telling the story of the person who is rifling through the storage, or the person whose items they were, or is there like a hybrid form of that?
I love this question. I gotta go hybrid. Like building your relationship to this person kind of flavors everything about how you would interact with it.
Right. It's like reading someone else's journal while you're writing in your journal. Like,
right.
You are experiencing these items, and some of the items I think are going to be mysterious or fucked up or weird because it's a game and that's fun. Yeah. So I think that you have some circumstance. Maybe that's also maybe part of character creation, is like who you are, why you buy storage lockers, like what's missing that you're searching for or something like that, you know? And then
you've got the three storage lockers. Maybe one is a family member, one is a stranger, and then the third one is something weird. Like, so you get this experience of all of them.
I like maybe that is a sub, like, you, so we have these adventures, we have these people that are designed with item tables and stuff. Then you, I guess, like rock, paper, scissors them. Like, left column is someone you know, right column is someone who's a complete stranger, and middle column is, like, someone you hate. And
so
it's almost, and then like the cards are still the cards that they are. They still contain the items that they do, but then you're coloring the experience based on their relationship to you.
Like, imagine the person you hate. Imagine you're in the storage locker as a thief. Like, how does that change your relationship to the stuff?
Yeah.
And how you need to get deeper into the locker.
Or the person you hate, you want to like blackmail them, you're trying to look for information about them, so you're learning about them actively with like nefarious intent.
So it seems like we've got the glimpse, which is where you set up this stuff. We've got the tour, where you enter and look at stuff and then set scenes based on that. What is like the exit end game stuff?
So I think we have an understanding, especially in like media representation of these things, is a lot of the stuff is less important. It's not like you go in and every item in this place is fire. So I think when we generate our item content from these tables, that there's a system by which they're like special ones. So say we have a D20 list of items. We say six of them have asterisks, which means that they're like critically important. And then we have some quota. So like we need to find at least three critically important items. Mm-hmm. So we're rifling through the storage locker. We're still learning from scenes that are not critically important. You know, we still can find this photo album or whatever, and it doesn't have an asterisk in their item list, but we can still like set a scene and talk about how it affected the characters and whatever. But maybe just our storage, our time as riflers is limited by our ability to strike gold.
Yeah.
And once we've learned a certain amount, or once we've like found certain valuable things, like we're good. We don't keep exploring to find more in the story sense.
Because like it also incurs an emotional cost doing that. Like,
yeah,
that's not easy to do.
And it goes back to the idea of this being a dungeon delve, right? Like, we have a limited amount of time. There is like, maybe the dungeon's flooding. Maybe there's just things in there that beat you up and wear down your HP.
Here, the things that beat you up are postcards that you sent, that you find saved in the storage locker. Like, that would get me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Emotional fortitude level.
Right. I didn't think about it, but there's... Yeah, damn. Because when I was a teenager, my dad owned buildings. I had to clean out one of them where someone had passed away and like found a bunch of stuff. Oof. And that experience was fine for me because I didn't know this person.
Yeah.
But then I did the same thing when my grandma passed away, and that's a very different. And I didn't think about it when we were talking about the relationship of the rifler to the storager. But having done that, those are very dynamically different experiences that are effectively doing the same thing.
Yeah, because I think like a family member rifler might be looking for a specific object that's different than the specific object an enemy might be looking for, which is different than what a seller might be looking for, right? The like the value is different for each thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if like instead of picking each storage locker and what relationship you have, that each player has this different relationship, and so you're getting all of these in the same place. I wonder if that's possible or if that might be too much.
No, I think it could be too much, but I think it's also could be really interesting. And it just
emotional.
Because that's the dungeoneering party build, you know, like
yeah, there's always one person who's in love, another person who needs to sell shit, and a hater.
Yeah, classic D&D comp.
If only.
Which of course in every one of those games leads to interpersonal drama. And then maybe that's an aspect of this too, like the people who are rifling through the stuff are in the shared space with the stuff with different motives, so they could have dramatic interactions there.
Yeah, for sure. I like this a lot. This is cool. This feels like a game that would be really fun to play until it became too much.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if I were to play it, I would only want fantasy weirdos or sci-fi weirdos. Like, no, this is just a regular guy. And I think a lot of the sort of horror things, horror titles or whatever that come with this trapping, the storage or the discovery, that there is like a weirdo involved. I would always... I just need weirdos at all times.
Yeah, freaks invited.
No normies.
I think, like, there's a huge potential. I like a contemporary Lidfic kind of game that's just, like, someone who is sad.
Yeah.
Doing their life. But you kind of need an extra imagination level. Because I think the difference in between, like, engaging with contemporary Lidfic as a reader and instead as a player, if you're asked to generate prompts based on just like, this person was married before and you didn't know about that, and you find like a marriage license and photos and stuff, it's like, that you safety tools welcome for this kind of stuff is basically what I'm trying to say. Like the closer you are with reality, the more coterminous you are with something that might actually happen, the more people you're playing with might have this actual experience with finding out family secrets, because every family has secrets,
right?
You know, except mine.
Yeah, mine doesn't have any, but
no secrets. So I guess
most,
maybe I misspoke.
Most families, we're just built different.
I'm built different. Absolutely no interpersonal problems for me, not at all. We just bought a storage locker for all of our games. You storage locker person?
We have one for the band. We keep our gear and our merch there between tours.
Nice.
It's got a smell. Not our locker specifically, but the place. It really definitely has a smell.
I've been to some in Boston that like gets downright subterranean. They are like hallways at sharp angles, all that kind of stuff. Freaky.
They're definitely strange, and like very rarely when I'm there do I see another person, but there are dozens of units in this building.
There's a lot of life happening and not a soul to be seen here. It's kind of the story.
It's very mysterious. And I think that's probably like adding to the allure of us wanting to play a game in that space, is just like how innately creepy such a mundane thing is.
Yeah, it's a heavy place. It's a psychically heavy place.
Yeah.
It's like kind of a graveyard. But none of, like, I feel like going to a graveyard, everything's laid out before you, literally. You see everything. Going to a storage locker is like, what if you were at a graveyard and all the headstones look the same and you don't know if somebody's buried in there or not, and it has a smell and it's the same fluorescent brightness.
Yeah, it's very,
Can we get this whole episode without saying the word liminal? Can we make it to the end without saying liminal?
I don't think so. I don't think we can.
It's a little bit like an airport.
Well, damn. We made a game.
Damn.
We hung out for a while.
We're back.
I feel like, what's it?
I'm thinking we are being back.
That's it. Maybe call this a shorter one because we did what we came to do.
We are done when the job is done, not when the hour is up. You know?
So Twitter still exists, and I'm on it at WC Game Co. for right now.
Going down with the ship with that one?
I don't give a shit. I'm not making new ones. I say that now, but we'll see.
We're ending the episode, so I can't talk about all my feelings about all the other ones, but maybe next time.
Worldchamp.io, you can buy all my stuff. You can sign up for my email mailing list, which is becoming the best way to learn about all my new things. Soulburner is up for pre-order at worldchamp.io right now. And worldchampgameco.itch.io for all my digital stuff. How about you?
And I'm Willie Yopes. I am online. I have a newsletter. I have everything. If you can think of it, I have it. Grab the phone book and look me up. Will.com. This Discord has Ghost in its pre-order. You know that. It's going to come out and be great. And I think that's all I got. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Brain Trust podcast. Brain emoji, handshake emoji.